Let me just start by saying I hope this is the last time for a long time that we have to begin an episode of the OHL podcast by talking about things off the ice. Last week it was Bounty Gate and lawsuits, and this week it's sexual exploitation on the part of a Billet family. We'll get into it. My name is Mike Farwell. That guy over there is Dan Mahar. Hey, thanks for listening to the OHL podcast. We are seeing all kinds of incredible growth, and we're so glad that you have found this to be your place for OHL information and hopefully a little bit of entertainment along the way. Drop us an email anytime, OHLpodcast@rogers.com. If you're watching on YouTube, thank you for that. If not, did you know we have a YouTube channel? You can check that out. Like, subscribe, share this, tell a friend, and we'll all just get on board and celebrate the great stuff that is happening in this league. But also, Dan, we'll talk about the stuff that needs to be talked about. I think in this particular case, I'm going to have a less than popular take on it and probably come across a little bit like podcast dad over here. So I'll let you take the first crack at the Billet family in Peterborough. At least one member of it that is charged with allegedly having an exploitative relationship with a player.
Well, there's not much more you can say beyond that headline. And obviously this is not the type of headline that the league wants to hear. And for those of you that watched the Bob Probert biography, you heard a lot about this back in the day, and it sounded not commonplace, but it wasn't out of the norm for these types of things to happen a bit. But I have a number of problems with this one, Mike. Beyond the obvious that you have an adult in a position of power potentially exploiting it and putting players or other minors in harm's way. So that's the obvious. That's the upfront piece. But I think my biggest underlying problem, Mike, is this league has, what, approximately 500 Billet families, and the vast majority of them are excellent people providing a second home to these kids. And you hear one headline like this, and it casts a bit of a pall over that whole community of Billets who put up their homes, who become that second set of parents for players. So I just want to emphasize, this is not the norm. These are generally great members of the community that are helping out the team. But what a tragic thing to have happen for this to surface and for any player to be put in this kind of scenario. So I guess that's my rough take off the top. What do you have on that, Mike?
You mentioned the minor that was allegedly involved as well, and I didn't add that part of the headline, making explicit material available to a person under 18 is the other allegation. All of this documented in some reporting from Rick Westhead of TSN. What you said, a couple of things. First of all, you made reference to that Bob Probert documentary, which is kind of where I was going to go with this. And I really like your point around the importance of Billet families and the role that they play in this league and other junior hockey leagues. They are, as far as I'm concerned, the backbone of major junior hockey in this country. And the number of players, Dan, I'm sure that you know this as well as I, that when they return to a city still involved in the game in some capacity, they'll visit their Billet family. They stay in touch with their Billet family as if they were a foster family, because that's what they become for a number of years. So it really is unfortunate. And I might go so far as to say, not to become, like, I want to be clear that I'm not trying to victim blame or shame here or excuse inexcusable behaviors. Even some of the other awful stuff that we hear in the grand scheme of things is a percentage, a rather small percentage of the overall number of people involved in the game as players, as coaches, etc. But that doesn't mean we should slough it off and say, oh, a few bad apples. I think we have to address these things head on, talk a little bit about the culture. But I recall a conversation I got to have during the course of this season on one of my broadcasts of Kitchener Rangers hockey with Glenn Healy. And he talked about, he was out at some, I wish I could remember the details, but bottom line is out at a charity event on that particular weekend, some gala that was organized by players that was raising all kinds of money for an important cause. And Glenn talked, he acknowledged, look, we're having some issues in the game right now. There are challenges that need to be met head on, but let's not forget. And Glenn would know because he played the game. He's still involved in the game. And he said, there's a whole lot of really good people in this game doing really good things. And you've brought this up before, Dan. I think one of the things that would be great for us to be able to do is share more of those stories. I think we do that on this podcast, but again, here we are in a week where we have to begin by talking about the headlines that Rick Westhead is reporting out of Peterborough. So context, I guess, is important, is sort of where I've landed with this.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely important. Context is everything, and I think we have a tendency to take the headlines, right, and think this stuff is widespread, think it just casts this tone over the conversation. But I think context is really important, and that you just hit the nail on the head there. When you look at the overall picture, this is the backbone of the league. This is a great community. And you're absolutely right. We tend not to tell the stories of these people because we think it's not a story, because nothing's happening. Nothing's sensational. Nothing's a big mind-blowing story. Well, to this community, it is. The fact that these people put themselves out week after week, year after year, both financially, in terms of their own space, all this stuff to accommodate these kids, those are stories. So I think we should tell those as well, because we'd hate for stories like this to be the only stories we hear about a Billet Network or any other part of this league or part of this community. So I think that's a very good point.
Good people doing good things doesn't necessarily make the most tantalizing headline to pick up a paper or click on a link. And that's just the way the world. It always has been. As somebody that's worked in the news business for more than two decades, I can attest to that. So let me come back to your allusion to the Bob Probert doc. And that's one of the notes I made in talking about this. Here comes podcast dad for a moment. Again, I want to be clear. I'm not excusing hockey players or people involved in hockey when I say this for the behaviors that go beyond reproach. However, I think it's important. And what I see as perhaps an issue here that needs to be talked about is, brace yourself, kids, sex and its connection to sports in general. Is it there in hockey? Sure. Do you think that Miss McGill from the movie Youngblood was created out of thin air by the makers and writers of that movie? Probably not. There was probably some person upon which that character was based. How about the character of Annie Savoy in Bull Durham, who slept with a different player every season in that minor league baseball town, and not one player had she slept with that didn't go on to have the best season of his minor league career? How about Wade Boggs and the famous girl in every city around Major League Baseball? How about Wilt Chamberlain and his famous statement of 10,000 women? I could go on and on. This permeates sports, and the podcast dad in me says, if we want to have the honest conversation, and we should be having it, about the role of sex in hockey at every level, right? There's talk about groupies or hangers-on, whatever it is, puck bunnies. Are we still allowed to say that? But they've existed for as long as I've known the game. So yes, this is something that needs to be acknowledged. Clearly, it needs to be acknowledged even beyond the players themselves, the athletes themselves. Let's talk about how sex has become a virtually interconnected part of sports at the minor level and right up through the pros, and then ask ourselves, what do we want to do about that? And are we going to cast a pall only over junior hockey? It's getting a lot of headlines for the wrong reasons right now. Again, no excusing anything, but that's kind of where I'm coming from on this. And I really think bigger picture here, we have an issue with, and perhaps a conversation required around the very close connection between sports and sex. And I'll just leave it right there.
Yeah, there's probably not much more to say. It's there. To ignore it is naive. You're going to run into issues. You're going to run into concerns. And you hear lots of different takes on this, Mike, especially with junior hockey. You hear the boys will be boys. You hear all those kinds of takes. Most of it is relevant or fair. But at the same time, I think all we can do is lean on the education, lean on speaking, communicating with all these people involved so that we have an understanding of not only who these kids are and where they're at in their lives, and helping them understand the consequences of actions and how they approach these situations, which is key, but also ensuring that they're around the right types of people and how we vet the adults around them. And this conversation comes full circle with the Hockey Canada stuff we spoke about, the billet stuff we're talking about, any kind of dynamic where you have adults with minors or even teenagers, some of them who have turned 18 or 19, still just having the conversations, making sure people are aware of what the potential outcomes are of their actions so that they're thinking in every moment they're in, they're using their brain. But I think you're right to ignore it and assume that, you know, we'll just let things lie and hope there aren't problems. You're going to get problems because they are intertwined, as you said.
I'm always reminded at times like this that we are, as humans, after all, mere animals. And you know what? Animals, well, they tend to reproduce. It's kind of part of the biology within us. And the important thing to remind folks here, I think, is that you can go about that reproductive behavior, whether it's for reproducing or not, with consent, without exploiting, without abusing, etc. I guarantee you, on this planet of 8 billion people, there are lots and lots and lots of willing participants to engage in whatever the heck it is you want to engage in. So I'll leave it there. Podcast Dad is taking off. Well, I'm not going to take off my sweater, but I got a good sweater on for being Podcast Dad today. If you're watching on YouTube, you know what we mean. Let's move on to talk about the action on the ice. And I don't know how else to say it, Dan, but what a statement week for the Oshawa Generals. Consecutive wins against London, Sault Ste. Marie, and Sudbury, outscoring those teams by a combined 16-9, only allowing 2 goals to the Sudbury Wolves, who are the second highest scoring team in the Ontario Hockey League. That's 4 in a row now overall for the Oshawa Generals, and they've got points in 9 of 10. Hello, General Motor City.
What a murderer's row on the schedule, though, right? Oh. You look at a road trip. Road trips are hard enough. Any road building is hard to win in whatever sport you're talking about. But in the OHL this year, I'm not sure there's a bigger murderer's row you can face than those three teams. Maybe Saginaw could have been in there. However, that you're not expecting, I don't think, to go into that road trip and come out with 6 points. You're thinking 3 points is probably a win. 4 would be fantastic. So to come out with 6 is just incredible. And I think the word you use, Mike, statement, is right on the money here. That's a statement to the rest of the league, as the Oshawa Generals have at least temporarily moved into third in the Eastern Conference. The upper echelons, you're serving notice, are you not? You're saying, you know, we've got our stuff together here. We're rolling. Don't take us for granted, because we just knocked off almost every power there is at the top of the standings right now in one fell swoop. So pay attention, folks. The Generals have announced themselves on the scene.
I'm glad you said that the way that you did, into third place, at least for now, in the Eastern Conference. I remember saying this several weeks ago on the podcast, how much I love the East because it's banana land, right? From first to sixth, there's like 7 points separating the teams, et cetera. We're starting to see a little bit more separation, but it's a completely different situation in the East right now than it is in the West. And we'll get to the West in a moment, but just to focus on a little bit further what you said, in third place for now. This is the wild point about Oshawa. 4 wins in a row, points in 9 of 10, and still they're 1 point behind Sudbury for second and only 1 point ahead of North Bay for fourth. So right there in third, but a point on either side. And both the Wolves and the Battalion have a game in hand. So how tenuous is that grasp that Oshawa currently has on fourth place? And oh yeah, by the way, while we're talking about the upper echelons of the Eastern Conference, can we help but talk about the Brantford Bulldogs? Also, points in 9 straight games, a 7-0-2 run for Brantford, who sits atop the East. For now, the Wolves have a game in hand on the Bulldogs.
The Bulldogs have been pretty consistent all year, right? And they've dealt with probably as much adversity as anyone around injuries, moving some players out at the deadline, getting some fantastic goaltending right now and Drobak. They're actually stepping up in many ways, which is when you look for a team that's going to compete, you're looking for those teams that are well-rounded, right? You're not just leaning on one or two players to outgun teams. You're not looking at just physicality and trying to shut a team down or just your goalie. Kind of all tiers of that Brantford team right now is firing. And they're, we said it from the start, Mike. This is one we make lots of calls. We get lots wrong. We get lots right. This is one we got right. We looked at that Brantford team. We said they're they're built for the playoffs. They're built for this time of year. I wouldn't want to face them in the first round, and I think they're kind of showing us to be right from what I'm seeing lately anyway.
I talked to a couple of folks on the eastern side of the league this weekend who said they like the Bulldogs to come out on top when the dust is settled after 68 games. We got a great email question from Joe regarding the Sudbury Wolves. We'll get to that a little bit later. We just talked about Oshawa, but let me throw this out here for consideration. Currently sitting in fourth are the North Bay Battalion. But just listen to the remaining schedule for North Bay. Windsor, Barrie, Sudbury, Brantford. Okay, I'm listening. Peterborough, Kingston, Barrie, Mississauga, Peterborough. I know that's a long list, but outside of Brantford, Sudbury, I think you've got a host of winnable games with Windsor, Barrie, Peterborough, Kingston, Barrie, Mississauga, Peterborough. North Bay's a quality club. They're back to full health. We talked about them last week and the gains they've made since the trade deadline, how well those moves are paying off. All I'm saying is 1 through 4, I'm not discounting any of the top four teams in the East today, Brantford, Sudbury, Oshawa, North Bay, in that order, as not potentially finishing first. That's the best I can say 3 weeks left in the season.
Well, that list you just read off, yeah, you're right. They're all winnable games. I mean, Mississauga and Kingston are decent teams. Now, you're not likely to run that table, but you've got a really good shot. So when you're talking strength of schedule, clearly that one's a little bit on the lower end. So that gives them an inside track based on where they currently sit. So, and you know what we said about North Bay on the last podcast. All year I've kind of felt like North Bay is a serious contender in the East based on the number of players they returned from their championship team last year, and championship quality team last year. And all of these veterans that are back, plus a step up from guys like Anthony Romani and the acquisitions they made. We talked about Bill Manis and the LeBlanc twins. They're loaded for bear. So you look at that strength of schedule coming down the stretch, it would not surprise me at all if very likely they end up with home ice in the playoffs, but potentially even that 2 seed or better.
Loaded for bear and probably a little fire in the belly after falling short last year, the North Bay Battalion. So I'll just say again, I friggin' love the East right now. What a lot of fun. And the teams, like, these guys are going toe-to-toe. Like, look at Oshawa and North Bay, or pardon me, in Brantford, over the past 9 games, over the past 10 games, picking up points in 9 of them. For Brantford, it's points in 9 consecutive with 7-0-2. Okay, let's shift our attention over to the Western Conference. And hello, Erie Otters. Was anybody paying attention when the Otters left Pennsylvania and went on a brutal, I mean, it's a long way to go if you're Erie, up through the Eastern Conference, Peterborough, Kingston, Ottawa, and the Otters go and win all 3 of the games without Benjamin Gaudreau. And all of a sudden, as we sit here to begin this week with only 3 more to go before the playoffs, Dan, the Erie Otters find themselves in 5th place in the Western Conference. I will not tell a lie. I did not see this coming out of this hockey club.
Well, I think the next scandal we're going to talk about on the podcast, Mike, is a birth certificate fudging, because I'm pretty sure at this point Dave Brown had to change his birth date and play goal for them over this road trip. Because what a phenomenal job he's done, right, in finding goaltenders who are actually quality goaltenders who gave them good starts over the last 6 weeks, really, for quite a long time. But credit to Stan Butler, the whole staff, everyone involved there, because this is a team who had every excuse to fold the tents based on how things were going on the injury front and just the talent in the Western Conference. And not only did they not fold their tents, they've actually moved up the standings over this time. So look out when Benjamin Gaudreau comes back. Heck, even if he doesn't come back, they're winning games right now. So, and can I just take this time to remind you that at the start of the year, my 2 dark horses in the East was Brantford and the West was Erie. So I'm starting to feel a little more confident about my prognostication abilities, Mike, because the Erie Otters are starting to prove me right as well.
Well, I think one of the reasons that the Erie Otters, not to take anything away, I think we just gave them due credit for everything that's going right, including an excellent point on Dave Brown and finding guys to strap on the pads and play goal. Stan Butler has got the guys buying into Stan Butler hockey. It's always well-structured. They're a well-coached team. In fairness, and because you brought up your dark horse being Erie, you'll know that I was pumping as much air into the Bay Shore as I could at the beginning of this season. I thought the Owen Sound attack were going to be a nuisance in the West. And right now, again, not to take away from what Erie has done, but in some part, I won't say in large part, but in some part, it's because the Owen Sound attack and the Guelph storm seem to be determined to slide down the way down to eighth place. And I listen. So as somebody that broadcasts for the Kitchener Rangers, they're going to finish in fourth place, almost certainly. And 2 weeks ago, if you had asked me, I would have said without much hesitation, it'll be Kitchener and Guelph in the first round, maybe an outside chance at Owen Sound. And now, as things stand right at this moment, it's going to be Kitchener and Erie as Guelph and Owen Sound continue a precipitous fall towards the bottom of the Western Conference. Both teams, Guelph and Owen Sound, only 2 wins in their past 10 games. This is the wrong time of year to be playing like this.
I know that some folks up at the Bay Shore in the Owen Sound area raised an eyebrow at the trade acquisitions and thought, you know, is this the year to be going for? Is this the year to be trading Nico Addy and adding? Because we're not really putting it together this year so far. But you look at that roster on paper, and thanks for raising the point that of one I failed on. Obviously, I had Owen Sound right at the top of the conference at the start of the year, just because I looked at the firepower they had and some of the returning pieces. And thought this team's great. It hasn't materialized at any point this year. And just when you think, well, maybe they're starting to get healthy, they've made the trade additions, they're built for the playoffs, things are going to start rolling. Here they are losing 4-1 to Peterborough. They're just not putting it together. And similarly, the Guelph Storm, I know they're still missing Michael Buchinger. A lot of their play runs through him, but returned Cam Allen. Team that plays with a fair bit of structure, from what I can tell. They're just a little short on goals, but still a lot of firepower on that. And like you said, going the wrong way. And meanwhile, the Erie Otters are sliding right into the void left by them. So is it just that neither one of them want to face the Kitchener Rangers? I don't know what's going on here, but I didn't predict this.
It is hard to figure, and I'm not going to throw Dale DeGray, the general manager in Owen Sound, under the bus for making the moves that he made at the deadline, because you just talked about when you look at this team on paper, I mean, how can you not believe in it, especially as it was starting to get back to full health, right? Colby Barlow, just in and around the trade deadline, makes his return to the lineup, and I don't need to document all of the firepower that's there, but I was talking to some other colleagues in the Western Conference when we started sizing up matchups, and somebody said, do you want to go into the Bay Shore and play Carter George and Colby Barlow and Ethan Burrows and Denny Gore and Sam Sedley and Connor Smith? Like, no, of course you don't, but something ain't right. And that loss to Peterborough, as you pointed out, that's the Pete's first regulation win in calendar 2024. Give credit to Greg Cowan with the note in the Owen Sound Sun Times. Was it a wake-up call for the Owen Sound attack or a curtain call on the 23-24 season as the team lost 4-1 to the Petes? And then on Guelph's side, they did get Buchinger back this weekend. So they've got their pillars of strength on the back end. And still, a week after, they can't hold a 7-4 lead with 5 and a bit minutes to go versus Windsor. They take a lead on Owen Sound with 71 seconds to play, and then they cough up that lead with 53 seconds to play. So 18 seconds later, they're back in a tie game. They end up getting the bonus point in a shootout. But again, just not the kind of hockey that you want to be playing at this time of the year. And if you look at the standings and the Flint Firebirds, who, haven't fallen right off the face of the earth, only 4 points back. Like, the Firebirds have a chance of climbing up into seventh or even sixth place the way that Owen Sound and Guelph are playing right now. Not much time left in either of those cities to turn things around. I think both teams are better than they're showing right now, but something ain't right. That is for sure.
The Guelph Storm, when I watch them, they look to me like they're somewhat robbing Peter to pay Paul the way they play. They want some offense. They cheat a bit, ends up in their net. They go back to trying to prevent it from going in their net. They're not scoring enough. So they're trying to figure it out here. But I think with all these teams you just mentioned, but particularly Guelph and Owen Sound, you never want to back into the playoffs. You don't want to be playing that way come playoff time. And they've got a couple scant weeks left here to get it together. But you want to start at least seeing some positive signs and some structure in your game heading into the playoffs, because the way both those teams are going right now, it's going to be one and done for them. And I think that's scary for both of them, considering what they've got on paper, as we just mentioned.
A lot of fun in the Ontario Hockey League this past weekend as a couple of previous championship teams were celebrated in their respective cities. We'll check in on this year's championship host in Saginaw. Joe has got an interesting question about the Sudbury Wolves, and he wants to know what the heck is going on in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. Oh, wait, it's the Quebec Maritimes Junior Hockey League now. Either way, Joe, your guess is as good as ours, but Dan and I will try to answer. And our prospects of the week still to come on this episode of the OHL Podcast. Tough to beat in Ottawa, Dan. As much as everybody liked remembering the 99 Memorial Cup team, celebrating the quarter century of that Memorial Cup victory on home ice, by the way, let's drill that point home. When a team wins on home ice, it's pretty special. The Barber Poles did that back in 1999. Brian Campbell, Mark Bell, former guest of this podcast and a great all-around guy, Justin Davis, was a part of that team. But the ovation that Brian Kilray got when he came out onto the ice with those members of that 99 team, they love their killer in Ottawa, and rightly so.
Legend, right? Legend in the city, legend in the hockey world. And it's always, nostalgia is great for some people. It's kind of not as much for others, especially who didn't live it. But for those that did, what a phenomenal team that was, what phenomenal memories. And I think it's always great for these junior teams to go back and revisit it, just to remember what those eras were like, the players that have come through that system. And, you know, I was a kid who grew up where my neighbor, Don McLaren, played for the Barber Poles back in the mid 1980s. And, you know, he was a hero to us when we were little kids. And so Ottawa had a soft spot for those Ottawa 67s, and started to follow them through the years. Then you're going to the Brian Kilray era, and just, you know, hard to top in junior hockey what he's done across the country. So yeah, there's a nostalgia for me always is nice when you celebrate teams like this, Mike, who are worthy of celebration. I mean, the 99-67s are about as good as it got, or at least right in that upper echelon of teams we've ever seen. So always good to look back and remember. So remember why we attend these games, right?
Absolutely true. And the 67s that year, winning on home ice 7-6 over Calgary, really personified the team approach. I mean, there weren't a lot of guys that really leapt off the page at you on that 99 team. They just, as a team, played so well together. And Brian Kilray, another previous guest on this podcast, if you haven't already, just dig back. You'll have to go a while back in the more than 200 episodes we've got now, but find the episode with Brian Kilray if you haven't already, or maybe just listen to it again. I'd say the episodes with Brian Kilray and Sherry Bassin are two that you'll never get tired of listening to. The other team, and you mentioned Don McLaren, your neighbor in the 80s, playing for the Barber Poles, and you as a kid looking up to them and him. That's how I felt in Kitchener this past weekend. And I know it's not just a Kitchener podcast, but this is the town where I grew up. I love the fact that I get to broadcast their games on the radio now, but the Rangers brought back the 82 Memorial Cup team. So that 99 team for Ottawa was the second Memorial Cup in franchise history. The 82 Memorial Cup in Kitchener was the first. It was the second straight Memorial Cup the team had been to. They went there in 81, lost Doug Gilmore, Dale Hawerchuk, and the Cornwall Royals. They went back in 84 and lost to Kilray's Ottawa 67s. And then the 89-90, how do we need to talk about that? Rangers, Oshawa. I just bring all of that up because what a decade of hockey it was in Kitchener. But that 82 Rangers team was the team in my formative years of watching junior hockey that captured my attention. And I'll make the argument, and I did throw it out on Twitter over the weekend, and you can find me at Farwell_OHL. Dan is at his name, at Dan Mahar. I mean, that 82 Rangers championship team saw 14 players go on to play in the National Hockey League. It has two Hall of Famers in Al MacInnis and Scott Stevens. There are six Stanley Cups amongst that 82 Memorial Cup championship team. I don't know how that team is not in the conversation about being one of the best junior hockey teams we have seen. The accomplishments that season and then beyond are pretty remarkable stuff in the game.
Can I one up you here, Mike, and just
Absolutely.
Say all biases on the table. I think that's the greatest junior hockey team ever. And I know there's going to be a few people raising their eyebrows and saying, well, what about X team? Or I know the 2005 London Knights get a
absolutely
lot of credit for that. And absolutely, they're a terrific team. You talked about the record through the season and how they blew through the playoffs. For sure, for sure. But that Kitchener Ranger team was something special, Mike. And it depends how you measure these teams. I know I was just a very little kid at the time, so memories are cloudy. But at the same time, that was a team, when you look purely at NHL graduates, which I know is a tough metric sometimes because some players were just okay juniors and go on to be good NHLers and vice versa. However, not too many junior teams can boast Scott Stevens, Al MacInnis, Brian Bellows. I mean, those are elite, elite NHLers. And then you talk about the other 11 players from that team that went on to play in the NHL, players like Wendell Young, and you're not even talking about guys who didn't, like one of the toughest players ever to play in the league, and Mike Moore. You talk about all these players that played for that team. It was something special. And I just think pound for pound, I don't think there was a better junior team ever. And I know my bias is what it is, but you'd have a tough time convincing me there was a team that was better than that one.
Young, Bellows, MacInnis, and Stevens, the guys that combined for those Stanley Cups beyond that Memorial Cup. Bellows had 5 points in the first period. In the first period of the Memorial Cup final game, Mike Eagles in that final had back-to-back shorthanded goals 14 seconds apart. Anyway, it was a fun weekend in Kitchener. It was a fun weekend in Ottawa. And speaking of that fun weekend in Kitchener, I heard this from more than one person. Just to touch on something you touched on a moment ago, Dan, this is why we love the game at this level. The Friday night game in Kitchener, 7,400 plus fans at the Memorial Auditorium, Rangers Knights to overtime, hands down, one of the best junior hockey games I've probably seen all season long.
That type of game is why everyone keeps coming back, though, right?
Exactly.
And I will say it had everything you want from junior hockey. I'm not going to say it was the most well-played junior hockey game I've ever seen. There were mistakes both ways, but that's what we watch junior hockey for, because mistakes lead to excitement. And they weren't mistakes of laziness or failure to compete. They were mistakes of overcompeting. They were mistakes of going hard, teams forcing bad reads, teams forcing turnovers. And to see tit for tat, London went up, Kitchener came back, London went up again, Kitchener came back. So there were highs and lows all through the game. Of course, it ends in overtime, thankfully, before you got to a shootout. So it was just excitement both ways. Could have gone either way. And I think if anyone had never seen a junior hockey game before and attended that one, they'd probably look for season tickets the next day, because that's what we come to junior hockey games for.
There is no doubt in my mind about that. And how privileged am I to go to these games without having to pay the money? They just work me to the bone. But honestly, that's the stuff that you would gladly pay for. The Ontario Hockey League needs to put that in a bottle and sell it. I promise that in talking about those championship teams that were celebrated this past weekend in Ottawa and in Kitchener, we'd touch on the team that's hosting the championship this year, which is, of course, the Saginaw Spirit. Don't look now, but the Saginaw Spirit and the London Knights are running neck and neck in the Western Conference. Just 1 point separates the two teams, London with the 1 point advantage. Saginaw, curiously, with one more victory, but London's got some extra points out of the extra time. But 8 games left for either team, and both, Dan, have a shot at hitting 50-50 wins this season. Saginaw needs to go 6-2. London needs to go 7-1. But Saginaw's schedule ahead, let me know if you think they can win 6 of these. Flint, Kingston, Guelph, Erie, Sarnia, Windsor, Sioux. I think they can pick up 6 of those, especially the way they're playing right now. London, it's going to be a tougher task, but listen, it's the team that went on a 23-game heater without a regulation loss. We might have 250-win clubs in the Western Conference this year.
It's crazy, isn't it? You turn your back on one and they stun you, and then you forget about the other. You look back at the other, say, okay, well, London hasn't lost in regulation 23 games. They got to be running away with it, right? But what do you mean Saginaw's right there? then you start watching Saginaw and you see all that these guys rattled off the 9-2 that we talked about last week, and they're just, and you think, okay, they got to be locking it up, right? And then you look at London still right there. So talk about Battle of the Titans right there. And you just rhymed off all the teams Saginaw has left to play, and theoretically they're the favorite in all of those, but the one that jumped out at me is the Sioux, and the Sioux has a real chip on their shoulder about that rivalry, and they've made a couple statements against Saginaw this year. That's, they're going to want to send a message there too. So the Sioux's, I think, 7 points back of second right now, but they're right there. They've been there all year as well. So you're another heavyweight battle all the way down the stretch, but two real heavyweights in that conference right now.
Chips on shoulders might be one of the things that makes it tougher on the London Knights, who have to go 7-1, because one of their remaining games is against Sarnia, who always plays London tough. The Knights have Guelph, Sarnia, Kitchener, Erie, Sioux. Sioux and London have been great against each other this year. Then back-to-back with Windsor. It's never easy to win both. And then the Guelph Storm. So that's what's left for the London Knights over their final 8 games. One more quick note on the Saginaw Spirit. Have to acknowledge Zane Perak. What an accomplishment. He reaches 30 goals this season, his draft year, as a defenseman. In the history of the Ontario Hockey League, only one other player has done that, John Slaney. And I think things worked out just fine for John Slaney with the Cornwall Royals back in the day and Newfie, beyond.
The Newfie playing in Cornwall, right? Yeah.
For sure.
Two that have ever done it. And let me tell you, two in the NHL scouting circles that I loosely follow, I'm starting to hear some teams may have Zane Parekh as high as 3 in that draft. So he has just climbed that ladder with good reason. I think he's a dynamic player shaping up to be an elite number one in the NHL level if he continues on this trajectory.
While we're talking about players that accomplished great things this past weekend, Zane Parekh, that 30th goal as a defenseman in his draft year, Carson Rakoff made it 20 consecutive seasons with at least one 50-goal scorer in the Ontario Hockey League. I think Anthony Romani will join him. Others have an outside chance of doing so as well. But Carson Rakoff, as I said, makes it 20 straight years. The last time the Ontario Hockey League did not have a 50-goal scorer was back in 2004-05. Go back to that London Knights team you mentioned earlier. And Corey Perry led the league in goals that year with 47. So there you go. But a tip of the hat or a tap of the stick to Carson Rakoff for his 50th this past weekend.
And I would add, did it in style. I think when you're going to score your 50th, for Carson Rakoff, it had to be a patented swoop around the defenseman, cut across the crease and tuck it, or bar down short side. It's one of the two for Carson Rakoff. You don't want the empty netter or any of that nonsense. So he did it in style in overtime.
All right, let's get to Joe's email, who sent us a note to ohlpodcast@rogers.com that really got us thinking. And please be the same. Be like Joe. If you're so inclined, send an email anytime. We always respond. Hi, Mike and Dan. Last month, the QMJHL Board of Governors voted to reduce the league schedule from 68 games to 64 starting next season. Apparently, there was a strong appetite to eliminate poorly attended midweek games while increasing practice time. Do you think there's any chance the OHL will follow suit? There's a second question about the Sudbury Wolves we'll get to in a moment. What do you think, Dan, of what the Q did and whether or not the O, or for that matter, the Dub, will follow suit?
Well, I think in the Q, in the OHL, outside of a couple markets, maybe 2 to 3 markets, they don't have as big an attendance issue midweek. I think the Q has some markets where it's a real issue, but I think probably the unspoken piece of this decision is that they know the NCAA's number one sales pitch to kids from Ontario and Quebec and the West and Canada is that they have more practice time, more time in the gym, more time to physically develop, a less demanding game schedule. And I know the CHL uses that as a selling point. We have a pro style schedule. We have a lot of games. It's going to simulate the NHL. So it's kind of counterpoints for each league. And I think the Quebec League is maybe trying to acknowledge here that maybe there's a little bit of a middle ground here. Maybe if we give back a couple games and bill it as allowing them to work on their physical development and practice and those types of things, it's a little bit of a counterpoint to the recruitment from the NCAA, which is a bigger factor for the Quebec League. Some of the territories in the East, especially in the Maritimes, are really having the draw of the kids coming to the States. So I think that's part of the decision there. So I can't see it happening in the OHL anytime soon, but that's just a hunch. That's not based on any info. I don't know what you think, Mike.
I think that this is something that both of the other leagues under the Canadian Hockey League umbrella would be happy to go for. You want to take 4 games off the schedule? You want to take 8 games off the schedule? The idea being, and we talked about this just a few weeks ago on this podcast, is it time to get rid of 3-3s? Not only does it leave a team on the tail end of the 3-3, possibly vulnerable to injury, but not playing their best. And then the fans who are watching that game aren't getting the best quality of game. We just talked about how great a showcase game can be for this league in terms of selling tickets. And it's just a long road through a season when you're playing 3-3, 3-3, 3-3. So if you reduce the schedule, obviously you can cut back on the number of those 3-3s. In the Q and in the Dub, the biggest factor here is travel. Right. In the Ontario Hockey League, with the exception of Sault Ste. Marie, and even Sault Ste. Marie's travel pales in comparison to the easiest travel probably in either the Q or the Dub. So we're never going to see it, I don't think, because just like the pros, and you talk about the pro style environment, the pro style schedule you get in major junior hockey in this country, there's money at stake. There's revenue to be earned here. And so I don't think there's going to be, as much as they would like to, for the betterment of the players, for the betterment of like coaching staffs, like everything just gets, spend more time practicing, spend more time developing plays and developing players, et cetera. I just don't think it's likely to happen. What I would love to see though, and what I remain curious about, is why on God's green earth, under the CHL umbrella, you've got three member clubs or member leagues playing by different rules. The Dub used to have a 72-game schedule. They brought it down to 68. Then you've got uniformity in that regard. Now the Q goes down to 64. Then you've got two others with 68. And I haven't even touched on the fact that in the Q and in the Dub, you can trade first-round picks. So the ability to build a super team, if you will, in both the Dub and the Q exists beyond what you can build, as good as Saginaw is this year. It's not like they could go throwing around first round draft picks in this league. So it almost puts the OHL in that respect at a competitive disadvantage. I cannot for the life of me understand why the Canadian Hockey League doesn't have some influence over this. I mean, it almost looks like the Western Hockey League, a bunch of hardworking farmers, so they'll play 72 games, and the Quebec League, well, just like Quebec, does whatever the hell it wants in Canada, it'll do what it wants in the CHL, and the Ontario League is full of the what do we call them? Upper Canadian Laurentian elites. I don't friggin' know, but the CHL, I would love to see it amalgamate its feces here and start playing by uniform rules across the board. Schedules, trades, everything should be the same because the leagues come together for the Memorial Cup, right?
Amen. Well, of that list of discrepancies you just gave, the number of games in the schedule to me is the least concerning.
Great point.
Because I think all the other ones are bigger at competitive advantage. I mean, I agree. I think it's absolutely ridiculous that they don't have the same trade rules, same number of cards, all those types of things that are a real competitive advantage. You can't have teams compete for the same trophy playing by different rules to get there. It just, to me, it just makes no logical sense. You almost have to put an asterisk beside it every single time. So yeah, I'm 100% with you there. I think they should align almost all of those things in order to make it a viable competition at the end. I don't know how they defend that otherwise. And under the banner of the CHL, I don't know why they can't do it. I know each league wants its own autonomy, but there should be certain things that are off the table that are non-starters. And those things are anything related to competitive balance, like the number of cards you can get, the number of trades you can do, what you can trade. That's uniform because you're competing for the same trophy.
Maybe the next commissioner of the Ontario Hockey League can use their Toronto-based mega city, largest city in the country influence to change things in the CHL. I don't know. By the way, just quickly on that point, I'm not going to be that guy, but I do want to remind you that several weeks ago on this podcast, we told you that the new OHL commissioner would not be who you think it's going to be. Jeff Merrick, who does great work at Sportsnet, reported that it would not be Joe Birch, who was about to sign an extension in Kitchener, which he did. I'm also here to tell you it's not going to be Barkley Branch who's going to be the next commissioner. Or if it is, I will be extremely surprised. And it's not that he wouldn't necessarily be qualified for the job. We've talked about this. I think he's done a hell of a job in the league office this year, but I'm exceedingly confident the league doesn't want that look going from a branch to a branch. So we told you several weeks ago, once the big guys at Rogers Sportsnet pick it up, it becomes something that people talk about, which is fine. But we told you here that it was not going to be who you think it was going to be. So no Birch, very unlikely to be a branch. I think there's a whole bucket full of intriguing possibilities here for the next commissioner of the Ontario Hockey League. But we'll leave that there for now and go back to the rest of Joe's email to ohlpodcast@rogers.com. Second question, Joe writes, it looks like Barry is locked into the eighth spot in the East. If, and we talked about the East earlier, so this is a big if, Sudbury takes the top spot and draws Barry in the first round, I have a feeling, Joe says, the Colts are going to give Sudbury a run for their money. In fact, I think the Colts can win that series. Am I alone? Joe, our buddy from Rhode Island. Dan, is Rhode Island Joe alone in thinking the Colts could surprise Sudbury?
I'll start by saying that I don't think it's out of the realm of reason to see any team giving any other team a run for money. I think the league is that good this year, top to bottom, where every team brings something to the table and can give a team. It is not going to be an easy out. I don't think the Barrie Colts are going to be able to knock off the Sudbury Wolves. And that's not a slight on the Barrie Colts. I just think that they've slightly morphed their team at the trade deadline to go for, moved out a little bit of skill and veteran presence, and they've moved in a little more of the 200-foot hardworking game, and that's actually paid some dividends down the stretch. They've had some great games. Some players have found their game. We've seen Riley Patterson was my prospect of the week last week. We've seen some of the wins they've gotten from that dynamic. I just think when push comes to shove, they can't quite match Sudbury on paper, and I know the games aren't won on paper, but I think in the course of a series, a team like that could surprise you one game, two games before the wake-up call comes. And I think that the Wolves are just going to have too much for them at the end of the day. But I don't think it's going to be an easy series. I don't think it's going to be a sweep. I don't think it's going to be this whitewash that we might have expected a couple months ago. I don't know where you are on that one, Mike.
I think you make a valid point insofar as, and we've talked about this quite a bit through the season, the parity that we seem to be seeing in the league this year. And you can make a pretty decent argument, I think, around a team, if not outright surprising, certainly making it difficult on the higher seeded team. I'm with you in this regard, if it's Sudbury Barry, and I think that's still a big if at this point, but I think there's just too much firepower in Sudbury this season. I'm still not convinced that what the Wolves have and the way they play the game spells long-term, i.e. championship success. However, it should get them into the first round and probably even beyond that. I'll just add to Joe's question. If this puts any seed of doubt into the minds of anybody in the Nickel City right now, can you imagine? Like this city has been waiting for half a century for something like this to come back their way. This is a team, unlike that 07 team that made the last memorable run and came into the playoffs as a six seed. This is a team that from the beginning of the season, there was buzz about. Sudbury is ready for this. Don't take anything away from this dog, okay? Because I don't think the poor folks in Sudbury will be able to handle it. So it's a great question. It's intriguing because we do see reasons to believe in virtually all 16 of the teams that are going to make the playoffs, but that'd be a tough nut to knock off Sudbury in the first round. It'll be a lot of fun. We know that, and we're only just a few weeks away from the playoffs. We will, of course, do full-fledged playoff predictions when that time of the season rolls around a few weeks from now. Okay, the final piece of business we have to take care of, as we always end with on this OHL podcast, our prospects of the week. Dansky, who you got this week?
All right, well, I want to go with someone that's been on my radar for a few weeks, I think is kind of flying under the radar, frankly, a little bit in the league this year. It's a late birthday from last year, but it's to acknowledge the terrific run we're seeing that we talked about off the top from the Oshawa Generals. And that is Luca Morelli. We've got a guy here who doesn't often hear his name checked in the reasons why Oshawa is winning. We hear a lot about the Richies and the Lockharts, and you know, even we've mentioned Ben Danford on D, and a lot of the players that they've had, the trades they made with Panette coming in, and so we talk about all these players, and here Luca Morelli just kind of sliding under the radar without a lot of mention and just piling up points. He's in 40 some points already, plus 16. A guy that you're rolling in various situations, and another name that I'm hearing is creeping up that NHL draft ladder. We're talking potentially early second round, or slightly after that at this point, because NHL teams are seeing a lot to like in that kid, and I think he's been a key piece of Oshawa's success without a lot of acclaim. So Luca Morelli's my guy this week. Mike, who you got?
I really enjoyed watching Morelli and Danford together the time that I got to be in Oshawa to watch the Rangers play the Generals. I'm looking forward to the rematch, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, because that game on New Year's Day in Oshawa was also one of the better games I had seen all season. Well played by both teams. I'm going up to Ottawa, so I'm staying in the East with my prospect of the week. It was hard for me to overlook Henry Muse this weekend. Three games for the Ottawa 67s, two of them wins, but more to the point, four goals in those three games for Henry Muse, a defenseman. He's versatile. He's played some shifts at forward, some games at forward for the Ottawa 67s due to emergency situations, and he skates as smooth as goose poop on glass. We all know that. But four goals in three games, a plus five in the weekend for the Ottawa 67s. Henry Muse is my guy for the prospect of the week.
And you know I love Muse. He's been on my radar for 2 years now, and also high on those draft charts, because he brings an offensive game that is hard to find, and starting to lock in that defensive side too. So another great choice. 2-2-2D from the East. Nice.
Who are these guys? Are they really Western Conference biased? I don't know. We surprise you on the OHL podcast. All right. I meant what I said, OHL, at the beginning of this episode. Let's not have any shenanigans off the ice to have to deal with next week. If we do, we'll deal with it, but we'll be upset. And you don't want us to be even crankier than usual, right? That guy over there is Dan Mahar. Find him on Twitter at Dan Mahar. I'm Mike Farwell on Twitter at Farwell _OHL. And send us an email anytime, OHLpodcast@rogers.com. Find us wherever you get your podcasts. Check out the YouTube channel if you haven't already. Tell a friend, like, subscribe. We love doing this for you. We love having you along each and every week on the OHL podcast.
The Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jagged Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundle from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.